miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, April 10, 2021. And welcome to the free range open air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are living in an increasingly polarized world. Oh, yeah. Governments around the globe are unleashing the forces of division upon us. Racial hatred and division has been amped up and multiplied by creating floods of so-called refugees with phony wars and pre-planned economic disasters, all created by the covert forces of world government. And now, guys, we have a new division. Yes, a new division. The masked and the unmasked, the vaxxed and the unvaxxed, creating deep divides in our society. Divides that are intended to be permanent. And, you know, gosh, just the other day, guys, I was just walking down the street minding my own business. And this gringa, you know, this American woman walks up to me and says, hey, you're not wearing a mask. And mind you, this is a woman I've never seen before, never talked to her, never met her, nothing. Just out of the blue. You're not wearing a mask. And I was like, yeah, that's right. I'm not. Why should I? You know, I said, this whole thing is a scam and I'm not a slave. Only slaves wear masks, madam. I threw in the madam part just for fun. Kind of going old school, baby. And of course, you know, she just gave me one of these. And walked away, you know. So, yeah, just imagine the nerve. You know, some woman I've never met, never seen before, just walks up out of the blue and starts telling me how to live my life. Unbelievable. And, you know, it's not like I walked up to her and said, hey, what's your problem? You're wearing a mask. Take that mask off. And I'd never do that. And it's like, hey, you know, wear your mask until your dying day, sweetheart, if that's what you want to do. But of course, that's a fool's choice. But ultimately, I know it's really none of my business. It's none of my business, guys. People can live their lives how they want to, right? And, you know, maybe last week or, you know, 10 or 12 days ago, this guy walks up to me and said, hey, you're killing people by not wearing a mask. I'm killing people. And he was adamant about it, too. He was serious. Guy was serious. And I was like, yeah, really? Is that so? And I was like, are you a scientist or a doctor or maybe an epidemiologist? Or are you just some guy that watches TV and believes everything he hears? I'm going to go with the latter. And, you know, every time I've been confronted, it's always been by an American, never by an Ecuadorian. And Ecuadorians have, you know, many flaws in their, you know, society and stuff. But one thing that's very charming about them is that being polite is an important value in their society. Being polite is very important to Ecuadorians. And that's a good thing. Because after all, you know, politeness is and social graces are, you know, sort of the glue that holds society together, isn't it? It certainly helps. But of course, those things are disappearing very rapidly all over the Western world. And, you know, my usual go-to response for anyone that tells me to put on a mask is I just usually say, you know, oh, you're not wearing a mask. Put on a mask. I just usually just say, oh, yeah? Huh. Oh, what are you planning on doing about it? And what's funny about this is the look on people's faces, because most of the time, none of them have ever thought that far ahead. And I can kind of see the wheels in their head turning like, well, yeah, what am I planning on doing about that? Well, the answer is nothing. You're just flapping your gums. And so anyway, you know, they usually just walk away like the cowards they are. But you got to have a little fun in life. You know, you can't let the idiots get you down or take them too seriously, frankly. Got to have a little fun with it. But anyway, the point is that there really is a new division here. And I'm sure, you know, everyone listening, you guys have experienced this in your own life. You know, it's amazing how you've got people that feel entitled to confront a complete stranger on the street. Someone they've never met before. And, you know, I think that's a little dangerous because you never know who you're dealing with or what they might do. So anyway, we've got the maskers and the barefaced and the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. And I believe soon to be the healthy and alive and the sick and the dead, right? The good, bad, and the ugly. But yeah, seriously, man, this vaccine thing is creating massive divisions, you know, in people's own personal lives, in families, big battle lines are being drawn. And I'm sure you guys have seen this in your own lives. It's sad in a way. You know, my favorite aunt and uncle were essentially blackmailed into taking the vax by their daughter, you know, my cousin, you know, and their daughter is a big hotshot head nurse at one of the, you know, big hospitals in San Diego. And she essentially told them that, hey, it's not going to be safe for you to see your kids or your grandkids or great-grandkids without the jab. Unreal. Essentially blackmailed because, you know, they're both elderly and their grandkids and great-grandkids are, you know, one of the most important things in their lives, as it should be. So, yeah, blackmailed into taking the vaccine, and they've only had the first dose, and I just pray to God they'll be okay. So we'll see. So yeah, guys, the battle lines really are being drawn like never before. And all of this is the result of government action, the result of government policies. You know, it's all a reality being created by government. And just think about that, the kind of world we could live in without this constant meddling and manipulation of reality that we have to deal with on a daily basis. And of course, this manipulation of reality is growing. It's growing. Yeah. And it's wild too, man. You know, I'm hearing more and more talk just from people you run into in a coffee shop or have a conversation. How many people are talking about that they think some kind of a civil war is coming? And that's not a conversation I initiate. I hear people talking about it. And it's what's interesting is like, what, a year ago, a little more than a year ago, any talk about, you know, a civil war would have been, you know, the rantings of a conspiracy nut, right? Kind of like talking about the possibility of forced vaccination and shutting down entire societies. It would have sounded completely crazy just, what, a year ago or so? Not anymore. So, yeah, a lot of talk about a civil war. And I think most people that talk about this, they don't have any picture in their mind about what that might look like or what it might be, how that would play out in reality. But I think it's pretty certain it won't look like the first civil war, where, you know, you just had guys lining up in these big lines and shooting at each other from maybe 100 yards away. Can you imagine that? Just lining up and shooting each other and hoping you don't get shot. That must have taken a lot of, you know, courage or stupidity, or maybe a mixture of both, to engage in that. I can't imagine. But, you know, if you look at the pictures of some of those guys, man, from that time period, you know, the 1860s, those guys were tough. They were badass. You know, very masculine, not the kind of, you know, feminized soy boy men that have become quite commonplace in our society, actually encouraged by our society. Well, encouraged by our masters. I don't think it's a natural, you know, process of human evolution to feminize men. But, you know, some kind of Civil War 2.0 would have to take a very different form than the original one, no question. Probably along the lines of some kind of guerrilla warfare. I think that would be the only possible way, only because, you know, the so-called resistance is going to be, you know, outarmed on a tremendous scale. And you can see why they're so hot to trot to take away so-called assault rifles. Because the people that are running the show, they know what's coming. They know that what they're doing is going to become increasingly unpopular as more and more people figure out what's really going on. But, you know, I don't see any kind of a so-called civil war being initiated by the resistance or the rebels or whatever you want to call them. I don't see it playing out that way at all. I think the people who refuse to go along with this agenda are going to be attacked. You know, and events like Ruby Ridge and Waco were, you know, test runs for this kind of action, you know, demonizing certain people or a little group of people and then saying, hey, we got to kill these people. They're bad. There's been other test runs along those lines. One of the most recent was Jade Helm, something that's kind of gone down the memory hole. But if you recall, Jade Helm was essentially a military exercise practicing taking over small cities and taking out enemy combatants, whatever that's supposed to mean. Yeah, slow burn Ruby Ridge and Waco, never forget. That's right. Those are real test runs. And it's really amazing the minor infraction that Ruby Ridge was started over. Now you had this FBI agent following around the property owner there. And what was this big crime? He allegedly helped make a shotgun that was 3/4 of an inch too short in the barrel, something like that. Amazing. But I think the first stages of this conflict are already starting to shape up here because we're seeing, you know, a handful of states that are openly resisting the COVID agenda, you know, refusing to stay locked down and refusing to operate under a openly draconian system. You know, a system of essentially medical tyranny that uses fear as the cover. Fear. We have to do this. We have no choice because of the invisible terrorist. But it's kind of interesting to note that not one single politician in the Western world that I know of has spoken out against the vaccine agenda. Not one. You know, even the politicians that are resisting the lockdowns and masking, not one of them has spoke out against the vaccine agenda. In fact, they all are going along with it. And it says something about the enormous power behind this vaccine agenda, doesn't it? That's something to think about. The enormous power behind this agenda. And essentially, you know, it's a power so great that no politician will speak publicly about it. They won't speak publicly about it. That's really something to contemplate, isn't it? The immense power that represents. But, you know, the problem with this scenario of dividing into states, at least in the long term, is that ultimately all of these states are beholden to the federal government. And when push comes to shove, they will have to submit or they'll lose all their federal funding, won't they? They won't be able to pay their bills anymore. And they'll have their economy decimated. Because ultimately, you know, the states at this point are all part of the same machine. They're all part of the federal government, really, because they're reliant upon the federal government to fund their operation. And of course, financial control is the root of all of this. And really, the more I study this, guys, it's clear to me that there isn't one single aspect of this system that is not under the control of the parasitical elite oligarchy. The international Jew, I don't believe there's one single aspect that isn't under their control in the big picture. That's why they've made their move. That's why they're going for it, baby. And really, the more I study this, the more that revelation becomes clear to me, as extreme as that sounds. But nonetheless, this is a good first step. People moving to new locations, you know, to be around those of like mind. You know, people are giving up their old lives to move and live around others who want to be in freedom. You know, where this idea where a man can still decide and create his own destiny through his labor and achievements. I mean, that's really the essence of so-called freedom, isn't it? The ability to have some control over, you know, your own destiny. But that is something that will not be allowed in this new system. Make no mistake. Only behavior that pleases the oligarch class will be rewarded or allowed. Make no mistake, that is what we are facing. But we are seeing the beginnings of a fundamental shift here, where people of like mind who don't want to be part of this agenda, you know, they're leaving their old lives, their old states, states like California and New York, where the tyranny is the worst right now, and moving to new states. And that takes a lot of courage to pack up and leave. People trying to find a pocket of liberty and to be around people of like mind. That's a big deal. And it's just the beginning. This separation is only going to grow as we move forward. And you know, more and more people are starting to realize that they need to live around others who are of like mind. I think that's an essential first step. And it's becoming clear to more and more people that, you know, living around people who have a diametrically opposed belief system and a diametrically opposed vision of what life and freedom is, there's no value in that. And I think that's becoming, you know, self-evident to more and more people. And, you know, I believe we're heading for some kind of a national divorce, you know, the so-called irreconcilable differences, you know, as they say. Because there comes a point where the divisions about lifestyle choices and a moral compass become so vast that they can't be repaired. They can't be held together. And, you know, if you study history over a long term, you can't hold together a nation where people have nothing in common. You know, where they have a completely different vision of what it means to live a good life. You can't do it, at least not organically. The only way that can be held together is by brute force and by the barrel of a gun. Because otherwise, such a nation cannot be held together. So we're really seeing two visions of what is moral and what constitutes a good life. And it's just amazing. You know, I was watching a clip from the enemy war transmissions, we know as the mainstream media news. And they were doing a segment on extremism in the military. Extremism in the military. And they had some, you know, high up guy in the military, some general, talking about how homophobia is a gateway to extremism and it must be stopped. Can you imagine the implications of this, guys? So if you don't support sodomy, you're on the road to becoming an extremist. And I'm not sure what an extremist is supposed to mean. It's just something bad. But I think the real definition of an extremist is anybody who does not want to walk in lockstep with this, you know, New World Order agenda. And of course, this agenda has been rebranded as the Great Reset. You know, the Great Reset is sort of the new Coke, all right? And really, if you look at it, if you're honest, the New World Order, the Great Reset, whatever you want to call it, it's antithetical to every core value that America used to be just 20 or 30 years ago. Antithetical in every way. But somehow we're supposed to throw that all under the bus and embrace this new glorious system because our masters tell us and because we're living under fear. And mind you, you know, what another man does behind closed doors, that's none of my business. But it doesn't mean I support it. And it doesn't mean that I see it as a virtue or a good thing for society or that it should be encouraged or that it should be taught to children as it is now. And it's just interesting. Just last night, I was reading through a book that my grandfather wrote many years ago. And in the introduction of the book, he included a quote from Carl Sandburg, you know, the author and historian. And while, you know, Carl Sandburg, a lot of things I disagree with him on, but here's the quote. When a society or a civilization perishes, one condition can always be found. They forgot where they came from. Wow, that's true. When a society or a civilization perishes, one condition can always be found. They forgot where they came from. That's certainly true, guys, and it stands the test of time, doesn't it? Because right now, we really are living through the intentional destruction of our heritage and core values. Things that every American took for granted, I'd say 30 years ago, or almost every American just took for granted, like these are the core values of what it means to be an American, all under the bus, and now all part of being an extremist. And on a macrocosm, you know, I kind of see it's almost like the human race is splitting into two camps now. You know, one camp that's going to, you know, trust the government, no matter what they say, no matter how absurd the lies become, they will believe them. And they will follow our elected leaders right into the bowels of hell. Yeah, a sort of hell on earth. You know, and it's interesting how many of our so-called leaders, they hide behind this tolerance for, you know, gay sex and transsexuals and deviant behavior. They hide behind these people as a cover. As a cover for a totalitarian leadership. You know, it's like they're saying, well, I can't be a dictator. I support gay rights. What a misdirection. What a deception. You know, they hide behind tolerance while they create a totalitarian society. Yeah. And essentially a system of medical tyranny. And it's a system of medical tyranny that people would have never accepted if they weren't living under fear. Fear is the lubrication, isn't it? It's the lube to make everything work a little more smoothly. Yeah, the fear of the invisible terrorist, the phantom menace, that, of course, is drilled into our heads 24 hours a day by the enemy war transmission that we call television. So, guys, two paths really do lie before us, before humanity. One path lead towards personal freedom and personal responsibility. And it's really a path towards creating our own breakaway civilization. And this is a rugged path that will not be easy or smooth. And I don't think it'll be accomplished in one generation either. And the other path leads towards a scientific dictatorship where the individual has no say over his own personal destiny. And it's a system where government experts will rule with an iron fist and from the barrel of a gun. Make no mistake about that. So big choices ahead for all of us. And that said, I would like to bring in my co-host and my main man, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Are you there, sir?
I am. I'm just turning on.
Here he comes. There he is.
Whoa, that's loud. Here I go.
I was just, how you doing, man? Good to see you.
Yeah, good. Great intro, man. We are literally, and here's another fella right there. Fella.
Well, here we go. Hey, okay, fella. Chris Weinert as well. Hey, buddy. How are you?
What's up, gentlemen? How are you? Doing well. Thanks.
Very good, great. Chris. Very good.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Yeah, I think you are seeing a definite schism in terms of paradigms of reality, without question. And it's amazing to see how many people are really snapping out of the old one and looking at it for what it's worth. And really looking at things a different way, whether it's things like the New World Order or the World War II or any of these topics. You know, it's amazing to see how many people are revising history and looking at it with a different scope and really starting to fill in the blanks, you know, things that were probably omitted on purpose.
Yeah, you know, Chris, that's one thing that's really been striking me recently is the power of lying through omission. You know, that's one of the major tactics that the mainstream media uses. They just leave out certain facts and they tell you the facts they want you to know and leave out the other ones.
How about this one, Dave? We're talking about a pandemic running around. It's really something more like the flu in terms of fatalities and statistics. While BlackRock takes control of the U.S. Treasury and takes the Pentagon budget dark under the FASB 56, none of this mentioned in the mainstream media. Nations left and right across the world repatriating their gold from the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve, or the New York stock, or the New York vaults, and none of this mentioned, right? Everybody's pretty much shut down, locked down. They pretty much run the small business out of town, which was like the infrastructure of independent thought and really libertarian values in terms of America as you know it. It is the basis of capitalism, having independent businesses not compliant to an oligarchy run by central bankers. And instead, through proxy warfare, through parallel infrastructures, these guys have taken over every crucial aspect of our infrastructure, whether even education or distribution of food or medicine or any of these things. And there's such a vested interest that is being funded by our own wealth collectively and is being used to destroy us by these means of deception. This is unbelievable.
That's true. That's very, very well said. And of course, we don't live under a capitalist system at all. We're led to think we do, but we don't. As long as we have this funny money that can just be printed up and handed out to the friends of the oligarchy and create sensations wherever they want, we don't live in a capitalist system. And I was, you know, just watching this little clip from the enemy war transmission we call television. And, you know, they were saying that Amazon, the company Amazon, has 800,000 employees across the country. Can you guys believe that?
Wow, that's unbelievable. It's almost as expansive as like the FBI COINTEL program or the deep state security clearances, man. That's probably dwarfs that. I guess there's 6 million high-level security clearances from contractors in the deep state in America now. That seems pretty wild there. You know, it seems like there's a lot of people whose salaries are entirely dependent upon their ignorance or their negligence.
Wow.
Well, Amazon was funded by the CIA, and I'd like to comment on an earlier point. So that just means that and the CIA / Mossad are the spook wing of the central banking cabal. So that just means that this is just a way for the central banking parasites, the malignancy that they are, to get into and destroy what Chris mentioned a few moments earlier, the independence of the small shop owner and the small business owner. And it's just so insidious. It is literally a cancer. And the other thing I'd like to point out earlier, Scorpio, only one of the tools is lies of omission. They are also massively gaslighting Norma and Normie sheeples, the good, compliant, obedient peoples. And they're also using specious half-truths, and they're hitting people with everything. They're using the most powerful form of mind control, operant conditioning, where it's not a regular stimulus, it's an irregular traumatic stimulus. So they are just doing everything. And who is doing it? It's the hidden hand, the Canaanites, the Phoenicians. Now, Henry Ford tried to warn everyone about 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago. It's the internationalist Jew. And it is just so ridiculous that what, you know, they literally see the human race because they are inbred, psychopathic, narcissistic, insane deviants. They're not really humans. They don't have a soul. They've sold it to something else. And they view the rest of humanity as goyim cattle, right? So what do you do with cattle? You put them in a pen. You chip them. You inoculate them to get maximum value with minimum investment. Like, it used to be antibiotics in cattle. Now they want to put nanotech in the goyim cattle. And finally, when there you have too many of them, you cull the herd.
Man, DARPA tech.
That's right. That's very well said, Giuseppe. And, you know, your point about Amazon is interesting, because make no mistake, Jeff Bezos is Jewish. And, you know, this was all created with deep state money. And this funny money that comes from a parallel infrastructure that Chris was alluding to, there's a whole secret economy. And, you know, Amazon lost money for like 15 years. Most people don't know that. It was a losing operation for like 15 years, yet it kept getting funded with more and more money to make it bigger and bigger as it lost money. So that's how many amazing, people could do that?
Yeah, no, Goldman Sachs and many of these other companies have always supported these things clandestinely, and as well as there's trust money, and there's even the Federal Reserve directly injecting cash into these things, whether it's through stimulus payments, whether it's through bailouts, whether it's through any of these things. What we've seen happen, what, how many times in the past few decades? This is unbelievable to see this oligarchy really using these mechanisms in such a way, and people really not realizing this and exchanging the awareness of this for convenience and really not even caring or seeming to care. I can't even describe it. It's like, you know, they're rushing to the face of a cliff and like, you know, one side is walking and the other side is running. And mm-hmm. Man, what do you do?
Yeah. And it Krolt in the chat room there is saying that, sounds like Tesla loses money quarter after quarter. Exactly. Tesla has never made money, yet its stock keeps skyrocketing upwards. But of course, they have big plans for this, because the reason they're going to keep Tesla going is that in the not too distant future, if you don't have an electric car, you ain't driving.
Yeah, and, Joel Olson was nailing it yesterday about those things.
Look at the screen. That's why I was late. I was working on a new to add our man. He's a full member of the Justice League now.
All right.
Oh, right. Yeah, right on. Yeah, Tesla loses money. And look, in the future, if you can't afford the $80,000 it costs for an electric car, you're not going to have a car. And GM recently announced that they're going to stop making gas cars by the year 2035. It's not that far away.
They'll start giving tax rebates to the electrical car people. They'll get like $30,000 a year for tax carbon deals or some shit like that, and then start charging people carbon taxes for having those things. They're talking all this crap. They're just trying to figure out all the different ways to play the algorithms to really, like Giuseppe says, maximize their yield off of the tax cattle.
That's and, right. You know, the great Frederick C. Blackburn, who up until a month or two ago was doing Blackbird 9 Breakfast Club, and he pointed out again and again in his weekly broadcast that the Talmudic Satanists have a blood libel against the European, against what they call the Amalek, right? And they are literally doing everything to destroy our heritage, our culture. And it's I do not understand why, like E. Michael Jones said on your show a month or so ago, you know, we were all victims of social engineering. We just didn't realize it. But those chicken swingers sure did, when they changed the law in 1965 and did all these other things as opposed to unnecessary and unwanted integration in the schools and all this other horseshit. And essentially what the Talmudic Satanists have done is they have chosen two hyper weaponized fractions of a minority, right? You have 19% of the population is black in this country. 80%, that's 4/5 of those 19%, are working class or higher? Do we honor and champion them? You know, the same thing with 2%, maybe 3% homosexuals. You know, easily 4/5 of them just want to have a normal life, don't want to cause undue attention themselves. And they even probably want to have a loving family. Now, you know, there's some statistical evidence that a lot of strange sexual things go on with them and children, but I'm willing to give a lot of them the benefit of the doubt, because I do know some who have families and, you know, the kids are fine. And so, but the point is the Talmudicists are weaponizing the bearded lesbian in Minnesota, the clownish middle linebacker who started Black Lives Matter, who incidentally just bought a $1.2 million house, or $11.2 million actually, in a white neighborhood, a white gated neighborhood outside of Hollywood. So that is the farce, that is the lie, that is Black Lives Matter, that is Antifa, because everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to win the American Dream lottery and have 7 or 8 digits behind them and have no debt and have the FU money to be able to go live in Montana on a ranch or go move in a gated community. There's nobody who doesn't want those digits, right? And the system is rigged that even for a lot of hard people, a lot of hardworking people who want that, they know they'll never get it, but they were willing to go along with a living wage and to be able to eventually pay off a house, have a car, be able to go on a vacation, not be able to pay their bills and have a little bit of savings. And now the vile internationalist Jew has stolen all that and is forcing us into some kind of weird dystopian great reset. They do not deserve to exist in this planet anymore.
Can I get in on this one?
Oh boy. Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right.
Ahead.
Let me loose, man. All right. Hey, I agree with what you're saying, Giuseppe. I think they almost are taking measures to through predictive programming, through Hollywood, through political propaganda and things like this, trying to demographically departmentalize the people that have been disaffected by their disenfranchising algorithms and mechanisms, their economic sorcery, things like this. And really what they're taking from this is not only all your wealth, and really trying to create a fable, a fiction, in terms of glorifying the gig economy and like making it seem like people can somehow succeed in this, you know, working 2-3 jobs, like I say, to stay broke. You know, this is absolutely a disgrace to the human dignity, to the family structure, the smallest tribe on earth. They understand the value of family, and that is why they try to disrupt it at all times, whether it's through the mechanisms of fear or through hope or through any sort of human emotion that they could impact, and even weaponizing generational knowledge against one another in the way that they do. It is absolutely no accident it occurs to the level in the way that it does. And this is probably why we're really facing the struggles that we are right now with our loved ones and many others that are failing to see what we're trying to point out.
Hey, I'd like to interject quickly that all the bright people in the chat room, Basement 5, Claymore, you can see the whole list, but XRCS pointed out, I said 19% black and it's 13%.
Right.
And so I do want to point that out. So 4/5 of 13%. And again, Chris, you're right. That's the insidious fifth generational mechanisms, warfare mechanism they're using to cause white children to go and tell their parents. What is the name of that new book that the military is even teaching now? That blames whitey. It's three words. It's not crisis of conformity. It's something. What the hell is it? Anybody know what that book is that they're teaching? That's just Jewish propaganda to destroy whites. Anybody?
The internationalist Jew.
There you go. No, I don't know. It's written by a woman. I don't remember the name of the book, but I know who you're talking about. And essentially, it's part of this critical race theory, and it just blames white people for everything, even though, let's face it, Western civilization was created by white people. And it's like that quote I read, you know, from Sandberg, you know, if people forget where they came from, it's going to be the end of their civilization. There's no question about that. And, you know, you're right, too, about this consolidation of assets and power. And as our frequent guest, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, put it, it's the purification of the oligarchy. And that really is what's happening. You know, it's the consolidation of the oligarchy and the purification of the oligarchy.
They're taking control of every crucial facet of our lives so that there could be a shutdown like this. And then next time they're making sure these small businesses will not be around to pretty much cater to the people that refuse to comply to the New World Order agendas, the people that refuse to accept crypto or whatever for trade. Or you know what I mean? Like people that want to get outside the system, it would be almost impossible to do this. Look what they did with like agricultural supplies, banning that. In the state of Michigan, our governor explicitly limited access to farming supplies in planting season, might I add, and really shut down the ability for local farmers to have farmers markets. I mean, this is an organic exchange, you know, something without Monsanto. And you know, this is they're trying to put everybody on the mark of the beast system. This is not a joke. This is not a, an exaggeration. I'm not like trying to preach a Christian or a biblical or, a, you know, resort to the blueprint that's in the Abrahamic Bible, we'll just say. But I will say that there is some effort to try to control the commerce of the world and the people that participate in it. And this is the ultimate control that they're trying to put on here. And this COVID is just a cover fire for it. The real thing is what they're trying to put on, like the vaccine, the nanotech, the crypto, things like that. It's amazing. And also, I want to add, most of these companies that have been funding this are funded from the money stolen from the taxpayers throughout every decade, throughout every administration. And you could think of $50 trillion that is being used right now against the U.S. citizens and the global population right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And of course, you know, inflation is really just a hidden tax. And as you know, several researchers have pointed out, there really is a parallel infrastructure where money is moved around and given to certain companies to create these giant oligarchs like Tesla and Amazon. Those are just two examples. You know, Google's another example, which now owns YouTube. It's all part of the same web. And but we're so many people are under this illusion that we live in this free range capitalist, you know, free market system. And it's just nothing could be further from the truth right now.
Yeah, I want to point out also that like BlackRock was pretty much the money that was funded from the junk bond swindles that was handled from Blackstone, another basic Rockefeller front, an organization run by Pete Peterson and those guys. So, you know, this is one of many. And then you get into like Goldman Sachs or Lehman Brothers or any of these financial front houses that are always on the right side of these coups, right? Always on the right side of these mining operations, you know, always on the right side of these crashes.
Yeah. So now, I think Giuseppe, the name of that book you were thinking of is White Fragility.
Well, no, I thought of Critical Race Theory. Critical Race
Theory. Critical Race Theory. Yeah, but no, but you know what I'm saying about the put options and things like that. These guys, man, their hearts and minds are completely vacant, but their wallet's always in the right place.
You know, I'd like to make one quick point that we're anti-Semites and we're talking hate speech, and that's because the internationalist Jew hates the truth and hates to be exposed, because that's what we're doing is the truth, and there's a certain level of intellect that cannot go beyond what's in front of their nose and cannot see, and therefore will never be useful to fight this satanic evil.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're up against, you really don't know how this enemy really operates. You probably will be thinking that people are being dramatic or entirely prejudiced for stating these type of horrible things. But if you really do understand the sinister nature of some of these people that are involved with this cabal, it will make a lot more sense as to what's going on. Whether you're talking the tradition of blood libel being, you know, expelled from what a thousand countries probably throughout time,
right?
I'm saying 1,000 different times and 109. Oh, yeah. How many times do you think these guys got kicked out of like Mainz? I can think 7 times. This is just one place in France, exactly. You know, in the 1300s alone. So like, I mean, God dang it. These guys get, you know, they're in and out of a lot of different things like this. And usually it depends on who's Pope and who's not. And this is really kind of an interesting thing too. So or who's king even. So, yeah, you really got to look at these guys throughout empire as being like the parasite guild that pretty much takes the wealth of nations and takes the wealth of these empires and pretty much does what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know, people need to realize, too, we've been programmed to have this knee-jerk reaction that if you say anything about Jewish power, somehow you're an anti-Semite and full of hate. It's not true. And it's really a matter of looking at who owns the largest part of this system right now and who's pulling the strings of the money cabal. So once you look into that, it's hard to negate what we're saying. But it's a complicated picture. And now this thing is metastasized beyond the international Jew. They've recruited many allies and through the power of the magic shekels. A lot of people will sell out their own family, their own mother, to get money and power. And these people know human nature very well.
Yeah, it's the only work in town right now is pretty much selling everybody out. They're making it like the Stasi environment after World War II, whereas if you want bread, you pretty much got to sell out your loved ones in exchange for it. That's why they're trying to turn this world into a gift shop. And it's really disgusting what they're doing with human value and really trying to replace human labor with robotics and AI and put this full spectrum dominance on. So, yeah, with these type of major injections into the marketplace, there's so many fundamental economics that are out the window in this time and so many things. This is why they're not telling you how much money's out there. They've taken the M2 off the statistic reports from the Fed. Now, this is one of many things that's going on right now. And God, if you get into that type of stuff, what they're doing with market manipulations, you'll see what's going on here. These guys are pretty much taking everything that's not nailed down. And they're putting this cover fire up, this theater, you know, where everybody's arguing whether you should be wearing a mask or not or getting a vaccine or not. Two of the most absurd things. The conversation itself is so absurd. And the fact that you've got to have it with 80% of the population is even more absurd. So what's going on with the mainstream media and with this Mockingbird meets Phoenix program agenda, it's truly sinister. It is a war crime. It needs to be called out for what it is.
And plus, you have to understand, listeners and viewers, that these Satanists aren't the entire Jewish population. Look at what these malevolent cancers are doing to the population of Israel. That's the most vaccinated population in the world, and they're killing a whole bunch of them to make a point, just like they sacrificed a whole bunch in World War II to try and get Israel created, allowed to invade Palestine. And so they are so Machiavellian. They are so anything to win. And that is, and the rest of us live by morals, live by a certain divine
principle,
code, yeah, right? Yeah. And it's going to be ugly if the average idiot who's now wearing a mask wakes up and sees who's doing it, because they're not going to differentiate the way I'm differentiating. They're going to extract their justice from anyone who is swinging a chicken.
Like any type of offering that they presented in terms of cultural engineering, whether it's a religion, whether it's the notion of like chivalry, or whether it's the notion of political correctness, any of these concepts, they always handcuff you with these type of expectations of the social norm. And they create these social norms, which are certainly not norm, and they're certainly not social. So like arguably what they're doing is completely hypnotizing, mesmerizing, programming people by these type of occultic magic principles that they really have focused on and worked on and have discovered in terms of duress and human populations and data management and studies throughout empires for thousands of years. And this is how they've been able to perfect this slavery system in the way that they have. This is their goal. This is like their generational thing that they pass on to one another within this guild or within this cabal or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, we're almost at the top of the hour, guys. And, a few minutes into the next hour, we're going to be joined by Vicki Davis. And, she's been doing some new research on this thing that's called the international socialism. And it's a new system that's part of the communitarian system. It's part of what they want to unleash upon humanity as a system where there's very little choice in for the individual. And so that's going to be interesting. Maybe 5 or 10 minutes into the second hour, she's going to join us. So I'm looking forward to that.
Is that like the China model? Is that like the China model? Is that kind of like the idea that they're trying to push
on
here?
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Well, you know how like they have like austerity in Europe and then they call it something else here, like, you know, responsible capitalism or some crap like that, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, they always have a different name, but they always have a departmentalized operation across the world running these type of things. Yeah, this is amazing to see how formulaic this has been. And I guess people that can see through this stuff and see the formulas of empire and who's behind this, it's plain as day. But others that don't, man, and their fear just pretty much limits their comprehension. Yeah, they're in trouble. These people are really in trouble, and we need to wake them up.
Well, think about – this is not new. Think about back in the 16th, 17th, 18th century when the East India Trading Company had a private army twice the size of the British Empire's army. And they
– without question.
They were – you know, this is nothing new. It just needs to be stopped because there's never been an internet before. There's never been a way – for the 7.3 billion cattle, Goyim cattle, to now communicate and realize and start hopefully seeing who is doing this to us all.
Right, and conversely, the enemy hasn't had the technology at their fingertips to be able to enact this tyranny on a worldwide basis. It simply wasn't possible before just because of distance and the time it took to communicate and to try to pound all the volume and the.
I said, stand by, Vicky.
Okay.
Just finished an interview on another show that she does every Saturday. So she's a busy woman on top of all the research she does. So we'll just kind of shoot the breeze here for a few minutes until she's ready. But I thought we had a great first hour and really good commentary from both you guys. And, you know, the chatters always impressed me, man. Both in the Revolution Radio chat room and the StreamYard chat room, man. Great, insightful comments coming in. And it really, it's a pleasure to read such insightful things coming from people that are listening to the show. So thank you.
Yeah, we're all in this together, man. We really got to coach each other up, man. Now, I'm not claiming to say I know anything or everything, but I will say that I've learned a lot from others, and I hope to teach others and be fortunate enough to share my experiences and my perceptions with them, and hopefully it's helpful to them in a way that they can prepare themselves to know what they're up against, because if you don't know what you're facing, you have no way to defend yourself against it.
Yeah, and I see Yogi for the Lord in the StreamYard chat room, and I've been talking to Brian and Jenna about this guy. He has a YouTube channel that has some pretty cool stuff on it. So people ought to check out Yogi 4, number 4, the Lord. He's got some cool stuff trying to alert people about communitarianism. And I think he's trying to reach some of the younger people out there too, which is important. We can't just be a bunch of oldsters out here, you know, preaching to the choir. So good work there, man. Good to see you in the chat room.
Yeah, he's got some funny breakdowns. He had some of my old YouTube rants from back in the day, man, probably on my first or second channel. He's probably subscribed to that a while ago. So he knows I've been talking about this coming for 6-7 years now, probably. I mean, and warning people exactly what's happening on. You know, the weaponized obtuse versus the well-intentioned, you know, the whole concept, BRICS versus IMF, World Bank, Shabbat versus AIPAC, this whole illusion, masonry houses going at it with each other. But using us as proxies and us as pawns in these wars. You know, there's a couple of books that I was reading about the origins of chess and the pieces and like the origins of pawns and like their value and why they're positioned in each place on the board and the value of each piece and why it's allowed to move in the certain ways that it does. And like there's a lot of allegorical descriptions in the background of each piece on the chessboard. And when you really apply these type of things and their origins to like this infrastructure of economies throughout time, it's kind of the same formula that they use in that as well. So like I say, as far as seeing patterns and formulas, it's helpful to really to pick these things up through, you know, reading an abundance of literature and old books and, you know, anything you can pretty much get your hands on and trying to, you know, piece this together. Because it really is a dispossession tactic where they use empire, corporations, religions in the same manner, you know?
Well, I'm a huge fan of chess. I've played chess for years. I love the game. I'm hardly a chess expert, but I love the game. And it's probably the best game in the world to make you think. And there's so many symbolic aspects to chess, too, as you were pointing out. And, you know, in the near future, I'm going to do a show on Bobby Fischer, probably one of the greatest chess players ever to live, at least in modern history. And a man who sort of figured out, you know, he was from a Jewish background, but he converted to Christianity and did a lot of research and realized he was running the show. And Bobby Fischer went from the media darling to an absolute pariah because he started to speak the truth. And, you know, another interesting thing about Bobby Fischer is that he claimed that the chess matches at the highest level were all fixed and that the CIA and the deep state were running this whole operation that he was involved in, you know, playing chess with the Russians. He started to figure out the whole game and revealed the truth and became an absolute pariah, was even arrested by the Bush administration, the Bush the Elder, for playing chess. Amazing.
Vicky's ready, Chris. I'm sorry, Scorpio.
Oh, great. Okay. So, yeah, we'll bring up Bobby Fischer another time. Absolute genius in many ways. But right now we're going to bring on Vicky Davis. She's ready after finishing up an interview just a little bit earlier. Vicky, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I'm doing fine.
So, Vicky, tell us a little bit about the show that you were just on, and what were you guys talking about?
I co-host the show called Govern America with Darren Weeks, and our show is every Saturday morning. It's morning for me, Mountain Time, 9 till noon, and we just talk about whatever we feel like talking about, whatever seems important that happened during the prior week, or, you know, like today we talked about at the end of the program, we talked about the article that I just published on my website called, what did I call it? It's about the socialist engineering, the death of the West. And basically history, but I try to tie what's going on currently to the history so that you can see the line of progression of what is a major movement, I think, to turn this into a communist country, a communist world, actually.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, communism was always intended to be an international system from the very beginning. That's how it was envisioned from the very start. And, maybe we could touch upon this concept of the death of the West. I see this being orchestrated. It's been going on for a long time. And it seems like we're in the kind of the end game of the destruction of the West.
Absolutely, we are in the end game. I don't know if you saw the story last week, but the Nevada Democratic Party, the entire staff resigned because the Democratic Socialists of America took over the Nevada Democratic Party.
Really?
Yeah, and the mayor of West Las Vegas, He switched parties. He moved over to the Republican Party because he said that because the Democratic Socialists of America took over the Democrat Party in Nevada, he is a liberal in the traditional sense, not in the radical socialist sense that they're trying to implement in our country. So, I mean, right now what we're experiencing is a radical socialist attempt to take over the country.
Absolutely. Now, have you looked into this this idea of these, what are they calling them, smart cities and
sanctuary cities?
No. They're in Nevada, like they're starting, there's a plan to start this high-tech.
Donut cities? The Donut Initiative, like the sustainable circular system, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's the new initiative. They got 12 names for the same thing.
I'll explain what I'm talking about. I just want to see if Vicky has looked into this. Essentially, it's up near Reno, and there's 67,000 acres that was bought by some big tech companies, and they're going to create they call it like technology zone or something like that. And it's essentially a smart city that's going to be completely autonomous and run through technocracy and owned by big tech oligarchs. And I'm just wondering if this if you've looked into this, Vicky, and if this coincides with what you're talking about the Democratic Socialists taking over the government.
Well, it's all part of it. It's all part of bringing down our country, our nation state. The socialists want to eliminate the nation state. And I don't know if you've heard of the Westphalian system, but the Westphalian Peace Treaty was a treaty that was signed, I think, around in 1648. And it ended the 30 years war between Catholics and Protestants. And the system that they agreed to in this peace treaty was that within a geographically defined territory, whoever controlled that territory could define their own system of government. Well, that defined territory in that treaty turns out to be the nation state. Okay, so that treaty actually created the nation state system, which is the only system, of course, that we've ever known. We haven't really known of, at least not overtly known, about empires, about having an empire or a continental jurisdiction. Well, if you look at the concept of the Tech City, that idea really goes back to the company towns, you know, that started out, I think they were mostly in like Pennsylvania, you know, for the coal towns and maybe the oil towns, but where the company owned the entire town.
Right.
And so the idea of the Tech City that Nevada is going to allow, they're going to allow two of them, and they are essentially corporate zones, which in international law turns out to be the definition of a port city. Ports are special places. They've always been international because you have international ships that pull up into a port. So the port jurisdictions were always separate from the towns that they existed in, right? And so they took that idea, and it's in international law, the definition of a port zone for commerce, and they've used it to be able to define effectively new city organizations, but they're not cities. They are charter cities. You could call them charter cities or enterprise cities or free trade zones. They have all kinds of names for them, but they're really the same basic organizational structure. But they are like an island in the middle of a territory. So
right.
They're an island unto themselves. They make their own laws. They make their own rules. They run their own infrastructure. It's like a company town that's international embedded in our territory.
It's like a Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is like the Hong Kong model. As a matter of fact, I wrote about the Hong Kong model when I realized it. Who was that guy? Patrick Burns. He was talking about that one day, and he mentioned Keiretsu. And a Keiretsu is a management type organizational structure. It's a relationship structure. Well, the port authority that is designated to run these international zones actually fits the model of a Keiretsu.
Right. Okay, Vicky, in the chat room, there's this thing, it's called innovation zones. That's the actual term they're using. Thank you for that from the chat room. And yeah, this is all part of a bigger system, and they're creating these same cities in other countries at the same time in Korea and Honduras. They're setting one up. This is an international thing. And, you know, it's interesting, too. You're talking about the how the government is essentially taken over by these democratic socialists. You know, and I know Nevada pretty well, and this does not represent the average Nevadan, not anywhere close. Not long ago, Nevada was well, Nevada still is a rural state, and it's kind of a redneck state. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean that in a good way. My point is that these people are not represented by this government. And it's another indication to me that the elections are phony and we don't have real elections. And lastly, the last thing I want to point out is that, Reno is the area nearby where the giant Tesla mega factory is, as someone else in the chat room pointed out. That's true. And it's very important how this all sort of fits together in a piece of the puzzle. Chris, I know you wanted to jump in. Go ahead, man. What do you have for Vicky?
I was going to ask her if she was familiar with 2016. I thought there was a big thing in Nevada, the caucus between the Bernie and the Hillary division there, and like Barbara Boxer and Kamala Harris came in from California to like overlook the thing and to lend legal advice and things like this in terms of precedence. Supposedly there was a dispute between caucuses and going into the convention. There was a lot of heated disputes in Nevada in terms of like the citizen caucuses, the way they have it set up there. I was going to ask if you have any insight on that, because it seemed to be like they took over the Democratic Party, not only in that instance when Barbara Boxer and Harris and all them were flicking off the Bernie people and everything like that, but it created like a cover fire where they could bring in a next round of quote unquote progressives, but that would serve as really hoodlums for like Biden and Hillary all along. But under the guise of this progressive Sanders thing, like when he like kind of joined in with them, they kind of merged into the super group. And I think that really they don't necessarily represent what they claim to represent. They are more like inverting things, like Joe Olson was saying yesterday about it, whether it's efficiencies, pragmatisms, anything like that, politics. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not familiar with that story that you just told, but I mean, that's the model. You know, they create a problem, and it's in the it's the resolution to the problem that you got to watch out for. Because then you have the two sides trying to reconcile, but the reconciliation is the solution that they were looking for when they caused the problem to begin with. So
that's a great, Vicky. Yeah, they caused the problem to begin with. And, I was reading about life in these cities as they're projecting it. Like, there won't be cars. You're not going to be allowed to drive a car. Certain people will be allowed to have electric vehicles. And, like, everything in the buildings will be automated. Like, when you come to your building, you're going to be wearing some kind of device that alerts the building that you're coming, and the door will open automatically. All these things are supposed to be so wonderful, but what it comes down to is a completely surveillance society within these cities. And like you pointed out, it's essentially a new high-tech version of the company store in the company town.
You can rent a scooter.
Well, yeah. The very first one that I saw that I didn't know what I was looking at precisely, but it was in the Marianas Islands. And a guy from China, from the Orient somewhere, he came and set up in a foreign trade zone, what basically turned out to be like a slave camp. So all the slave camps that you've heard about around the world, they are the company-owned towns. And it's under this system of charter cities. Okay, now, if you take the game plan from the top, get rid of nation states, the cities that are connected, the global cities become the structure, and then the businesses, the global businesses, they have their towns for commerce. So you've got the conference, U.S. Conference of Mayors, that are actually involved in this whole thing of cooperating to bring down the nation states.
Right. Interesting. Wow. Let's get Giuseppe in on here, man. Giuseppe, take it away, man.
Well, in addition to the mayors, you've got billionaire transgendered freaks like Pritzker out of Chicago. Oy vey, Jennifer Pritzker, the pudgy, ugly Jew, is now a lady. And And there, you know, the Pritzker Forum on Global Cities is just ridiculous. They're doing everything they can to circumvent government at the state and federal level. Well, the federal government's been compromised long ago. So, Vicky, what do you think people can do to somehow, because voting doesn't work, there is no political solution. So what can people do?
Well, if you happen to catch it, like we did here in Idaho, that's how I got into researching the whole charter port city kind of thing, was that they were trying to do that in Boise, Idaho. And it even included 60,000 acres for a Chinese city, which I didn't research that Chinese city as much as I did focus on the mayors and the city councils in this organization called the Treasure Valley Economic Partnership and the connection to the Chamber of Commerce. And they essentially set up a Keiretsu that, as I said, turns out to be a port authority. And they tried to set up a zone in Meridian, Idaho. And so my focus was on, and the reason I found out about it was because there was an article in the Statesman, Idaho Statesman, and somebody sent it to me and said, what do you think about this? Well, there was a delegation of 23 Chinese people that were coming to Meridian, Idaho, to look at investments.
Right.
Well, you know, I can't tell you how many alarm bells went off in my mind about that. I mean, you know, 23 really rich Chinese coming to a very small Idaho farm town. This is not good, because they could buy the whole city of Boise, for heaven's sakes. You know, and so I started researching it, and I found out that, oh, Idaho was parts of Idaho were designated as a targeted employment zone, which means that it was designated to be able to, at least some private organizations were designated to be able to set up an EB-5 regional center, which the EB-5 visa program is basically selling American citizenship in exchange for an investment of either $500,000 or $1 million. Those were the numbers at the time, depending upon whether a city was very urban or whether it was a rural area. This regional center could accept foreign direct investment to build the zone, you know, which turns out to be ultimately, it turns out to be one of these charter cities. But when they first started out, it's a workforce development zone connected with the university. And it's really kind of it's an amazing structure. When I first started researching it, I knew it was a construct that was multiple layers of that had to be built over time. So I called it a Trojan triangle because I needed a name for the entire structure and I didn't have a name for it. So I called it a Trojan triangle, and because it appeared to be modeled after the North Carolina Research Triangle, which turned out to be right. You know, that is what it was.
Well, and what that is, the North Carolina Research Triangle?
It's an area that it was designated a long time ago, and I think it was started by IBM, actually. And it's a research park, you know, where with the idea being like Silicon Valley, where you have businesses that are all related, that congregate together so that they can have the best talent in the country, so that it becomes the best place to work for whatever your field happens to be. And so that's the concept. And so you get, you know, the best college for whatever it is, and the best professors, the best people. And it becomes kind of like a colony for a particular segment of an industry or multiple industries, you know, whoever locates there.
So to clarify, Research Triangle Park was created in North Carolina, anchored by three major research universities, North Carolina State, Duke University, and UNC Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm. And I think IBM was one of the first businesses in there.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's fascinating. And, you know, Vicki, what's interesting about this concept of these smart cities or innovation zones is that, you know, they're all going to be run exactly the same way under the same vision. It's not going to be like, well, hey, let's try this system and we'll let people live a certain way here. It's all going to be exactly the same, which indicates this is all being dictated from a central source. What do you think that central source is? And what do you think the hidden agenda is behind it?
Well, the hidden agenda is basically you have captive workers, you know, because once you would move into a zone, they basically own you, you know. So, and if you look at Agenda 21, the principles of Agenda 21, the city will be run according to Agenda 21 in terms of energy efficiency. That's why you can't have cars in there, because cars, of course, generate pollution and carbon and everything. So, so you can just cut it short and say that Agenda 21 sets the rules for the zones. But the thing is that those corporations, it's kind of like, you know, I worked up in Alaska, and I did spend a few days up on the North Slope at ARCO's main construction camp. And at the main construction camp, they give you, you live up there. And, you know, it's 24/7. And they feed you. They have little stores, but things that you need, you can get them. They will give them to you if you need them. It's like a, you could say a prison camp or a internment camp. But you can't just voluntarily walk away, because up in on the North Slope, you know, it's nothing but a Arctic desert. So there's nowhere to go, nothing to do. You're just captive in the main construction camp.
Right. Okay, I have a question from Larkin, Texas, in the chat room here that I want you to kind of contemplate and see what you think. The question is, Vicki, how do we fix big tech? Do we not know by now these tech-crazed cretins will innovate us into techno-slavery? Are these people not the unwitting dupes and useful idiots the Marxist-Leninists spoke so fondly about?
Yeah, but they're embedded in our government. For example, Eric Schmidt is on the Defense Science Policy Board. Okay, so if you think about, okay, think about our country and all of the systems that run our country, and I'm talking about the smart grid, the, now we don't have all the stuff on the electric grid yet, but we're getting there. Think about if they shut off all of the computer systems. Think about if there was an EMF attack, and I guess which would shut down the electric grid, which would shut down the computer systems. Our country would be frozen in time, in place, because computer systems run our country. And for the most part, you don't see the systems, you don't know about the systems. I mean, you kind of do, but you don't really. And we would be in a world of hurt. Now, that doesn't mean that our government couldn't stop these tech giants. You know, a bullet aimed at your head does wonders. You know, so, but these tech giants, they seem to be untouchable. But they're really not. They're human just like we are. So they could be stopped. And anybody who didn't continue to man their posts at the computers could receive equal treatment. But the problem is our government has basically, what would you say, they surrendered our country to the tech giants in terms of policies and the management of our country. And yeah. I think I haven't read this yet. I've avoided it because reading legislation is just such a bore.
Yeah.
But the 1996 Telecommunications Act is apparently when that happened. And what the problem they were looking at in the early 1990s was the potential of the computing power potential. And they knew that the government employees could not manage they couldn't implement all of the systems as they were being marketed. All these wondrous visions of things that we could have if only, you know, the tech giants, the telecommunications systems people were enabled to build it. And so they essentially turned over government policy making to these tech companies. And that apparently started with the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Oh, yeah. You know, so many of these things date back to the Clintons, and they just took 20 to 30 years to actually come into fruition. The Clintons did so much damage. It's incredible. But, Vicky, I think you made a very important point that all of this goes back to the Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, United Nations dictates about how cities and civilizations are going to be run. That's the central source of, in terms of a government entity. I totally agree. Very, very good point. Chris, why don't you jump in, man? What do you got? Okay, well, I guess Chris isn't here. Giuseppe, why don't you take it away, man? Go ahead.
Okay, you got it, bro. Vicky, right. I have a question. There's a interesting fella in the chat, the Revolution Radio chat, named Brad D, with a D in there, Brad D. He must live in Idaho. And, man, so much chat's gone by so fast, I got to scroll up and find it. What the heck? Did it all disappear? Oh, no, there it is. Gone. He goes, a recent key power player infiltrator in Idaho is Steve Yates. He runs a business consulting firm for investors working with the Chinese. He threw his hat in the ring to unseat rebel Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeachin. Yates is a Brookings Institute fellow and a former personal national security advisor to Darth Cheney, a.k.a. Dickhead Cheney. Somebody to watch if you're interested in Idaho politics. Do you know anything about Steve Yates?
Yeah, I think his name came up. There was an issue about a, quote, secret society operating in Idaho, and I think it was Steve Yates that, let me see if I can find his name. One of our elected representatives supposedly covertly filmed Steve Yates, and he was asking him about, it had to do with the political parties and a $100,000 donation. And I can't quite remember. Let me see if I can find him.
Yes, the donations. It always comes down to donations.
Well, he's a Mormon who attended Brigham Young University, was a Mormon missionary in Taiwan from 87 to 89, speaks fluent Mandarin, and interesting that he jumped in with one of Satan's most effective minions, Dick Cheney. That's very interesting.
Well, and it's interesting too that as Mike Gaddy's pointed out, Mormons are highly targeted and sought after in terms of recruitment for intelligence agencies and the FBI. There's many, many Mormons within these organizations. I just wanted to point that out. Interesting. Chris, go ahead. We tried to get you on earlier, but go ahead, man.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, man. I was making my daughter a tuna fish sandwich. Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I was away for a minute. I was going to say the Mormons also have connections to London. If you remember, the 12 apostles of Mormonism were pretty much British agents or trained in London in Masonic connections to the city of London, Brigham Young and all them guys. So there's a lot of connections with that. It seems to be like every generation there's a departmentalized militant religious order, whether it's things like the Jesuits, the Mormons, the Evangelicals, or society, go on and on. Scientology, go on through the generations. But it seems to be a formula that's always loyal to this group of international Kabbalistic bankers. And they always really send this missionary model into these foreign civilizations to put up, like what she was saying, these port cities where they do lead not only exchange rates of currencies, exchange rates of goods. They pretty much use things like the merchant's pound. And if you remember things like in The Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare says the Venetian law is the highest law of the land. This is probably why they have that or had that, is because it was really to like the USC code of the day, the thing that settled these international trade disputes or these things that dealt with things like sovereign bond debt issuances or things like that.
Let's remember, you have to have some powerful mojo to take down a Mormon in their magic underpants.
Okay, the deal with Mormons is that they were very early into the computer revolution, the information age. And so the University of Utah that's in Salt Lake City, they were probably among the very earliest of universities to offer education in computer science. And there are some big tech companies there. And WordPerfect, I don't know if you remember WordPerfect, but they were there in Utah.
Orem, Utah.
Yeah. And
they're telling how this guy come into this, right?
Pardon me?
Like Howard Hughes' guys, Intertel, his own private intelligence agency in the 50s, don't they eventually get taken over by the Mormons and become like TRW and all these deep state things?
That's
like
exactly right.
The Mormon mafia?
Yeah.
In fact, that's the final decade of Howard Hughes' life, he was totally surrounded by Mormons. They were his trusted operatives.
That's right. And in fact, many believe that Howard Hughes's assets were essentially stripped by this Mormon mafia that worked their way inside of his organization, and that he had actually died sometime before, and they kept him alive so they could finish stripping the assets. And what's interesting, if you fast forward to today, Vegas is controlled very heavily by Mormons, working hand in glove with Jewish people. So those are the two most powerful groups in Las Vegas now are Mormons.
Resorts International, too, came from this as well.
I wasn't aware of that with Las Vegas, but I did do some research on Howard Hughes when I wrote my paper on the Human Genome Project. And what the Mormons did with a lot of that money is that they got him supposedly to donate money to for genetic research to find the genesis of life. I think is the way that he put it. So, and Mormons, of course, they're very interested in genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the computers are really very useful for that sort of thing.
Right. And it's you know, the Mormons also are deeply connected to Freemasonry. In fact, you can't even separate the two. All the original founders were Freemasons, and, years ago, when they first opened this mega church regional center in San Diego for the Mormon Church. They were giving tours of this mega operation when it first opened, and I went and checked it out, and there was Masonic symbols all over that building. And what's interesting about Mormonism too is that, you know, there's rankings within the church, and you can't even go into certain areas of the of these big buildings unless you're at a certain level within the church. It's all organized like Freemasonry. So that's another interesting little parallel there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually grew up in Idaho Falls, which at the time had more Mormons per capita than Salt Lake City. So, and at the time, there were only like 7 temples in the world, and one of them was in Idaho Falls. Now they put up temples everywhere, but back then, a temple was a really very special place.
In the District of Criminals, there, if you're coming from Maryland to New Bolshevik, Northern Virginia, there's this huge temple with literal actual golden spires. It looks like it's part of a set for a Star Wars or a Star Trek movie. It's got a bunch of a series of giant white spires, and each of the spires is coated with real gold. It's unbelievable.
Well, I think Moroni, you know, blowing his horn is always in gold.
That's right. It's one of them is on top of there. And so that's a huge Mormon temple right there. I see it all the time when I'm driving back home from Maryland.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's wild. The intersectionality of all this. I don't know why Mormons are so deeply into the intelligence agencies, but according to Mike Gatti, they're actually sought after to be recruited for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, I heard an FBI.
Once you're in a cult, man, you're very useful.
Yeah.
Oh, good point. Go ahead.
Do you have Vicky or me?
Go ahead, Chris, and then we'll get Vicky.
I'll be quick. Yeah, I'll be quick. All right, yeah, the Mormons are just like very similar to the Jesuits. They're a religious militant order where they take these kids and train them at a young age through this sort of punishment and reward system, this obedience, this blind loyalty system. So they do become departmentalized operatives in many, many ways, and they departmentalize many people under these different pretenses, whether it's through religion or politics or anything like that. So Mormons are usually obedient because they are of a moral base, of a religious base, and of a fear-based a hierarchy of cruelty. They have an understanding of these orders. So yeah, that's a big reason why. And they're also, pretty good at keeping these secrets. They keep within themselves. It's very similar to like the Jews and how they're modeled, you know, where they pretty much stay within their own ranks. They're harnessed into like ghettos or in their own communities, and they pretty much play within their own system of justice. And they go after their own kind, especially and exceptionally hard for atonement if they betray the creed or the order or the whatever. So yeah, interesting stuff there. I just want to put that out there, and a great call about the Masonic connection, because that is all day. I meant to say that, but it slipped my mind.
Sounds like a call to me.
I owe them a debt of gratitude because they put steel in my spine. They are very clannish, and if you're not one of the group, you're excluded. And so I went to high school in Idaho Falls, and you know how peer pressure works among young people. And I resisted being recruited into the church. My brother did marry a good Mormon girl. But growing up in that circumstance made me able to resist anything. You know, if you can resist that kind of peer pressure, you can resist anything. So I owe them a debt of gratitude for that.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, nothing like personal life experience.
Mormons are always all over mining operations, too. I don't know if you're familiar with them, like in Mexico when they found the silver mines in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They were all over that, as well as the fuel fields. Also, before that, Sutter's Mill and the gold rush of 1848 was big-time Whigs and Mormons, and that's a big, big thing that never gets made in terms of American history and connections.
Yeah. Well, you know that the tithing that they have to pay to the church is 10%. And
be a Mormon.
The UK wanted to tax them as a business because of that. you know, not a church, but as a business.
So. Well, sure, the mafia too. You got to give the Godfather a little taste of the action.
Gotta let him kick up.
What's that?
I was saying you got to kick up, man. You got to kick up.
Yeah, it's kind of hierarchical system that you're talking about. You got to let the Godfather wet his beak. You know, if you want to be in the club, no question. And it's
the flip side of that, though, is that if you get in trouble and you need something, you know, food, money to pay your rent, whatever, they will help you. You know, they don't turn their backs on their members. If you need a job, they will help you get a job. I mean, they do take care of their members. So, you know, that's the other side of it. But as far as, you know, the intelligence communities recruiting from the Mormons, the reason why I think is because they do raise good law-abiding citizens, clean-cut, you know, straight arrow.
Certainly.
And, of course, once they go into the intelligence community, all bets are off. But they start out that way anyway.
Well, and I think, as Chris was pointing out, what happens is their loyalty can be assured just from their background and being raised. And, of course, intelligence agencies always feed people the minimum amount of knowledge they need. You know, everything's compartmentalized. So, you know, I'm sure they tell the Mormons a certain story about what they're doing, just enough to get their job done. It's all about compartmentalization.
Mm-hmm. That's actual gold if you look at that picture. That's actual gold coating. So that's what I see. It's crazy. It's giant. I mean, I don't know if you can, but it stands upon everything else when you're driving on the beltway. It's something.
Wow, it looks like they looted the Aztecs.
Well, maybe they got some of that 9/11 gold. Who knows?
So maybe they looted the Aztecs.
Yeah. Well, we're almost at the top of the hour already. Is there anything you want to add about these innovation zones and the smart cities and how this ties together with the future they're trying to create for us?
Well, those and the innovation zones, people should be very aware of those because they are part of the plan that to end our nation state. I mean, you can just picture the United States and then picture all of the economic wealth of the country concentrated in these zones and in the cities and not subject to, by the way, the zone authorities, the port authorities, are their own taxing districts. So their ownership of that territory, of that zone, includes its own taxing authority. So they're not paying taxes to either the state or the
system too, right? I'm sorry to talk. I just want to ask you, like this extraterritoriality thing, like you're talking about, don't they have a separate legal system that they're accountable to if they're in foreign countries? Or are we talking about the same thing, or is that something different?
Well, they're accountable to the globe. They're part of the global system. It is international territory. So they are not subject to the laws of whatever country they're in. And even just a straight up foreign trade zone, which we have quite a few of them, I think it was advanced preparation for this period of time of elimination of the nation state and going to this global system of commerce. But even just a straight foreign trade zone, your local sheriff cannot go into that territory. He's got to be let in by a customs and border protection agent, a federal agent. So even though the foreign trade zone is in his county and there could be a dead body laying right there on the other side of the fence, sheriff can't go in.
That's wild. It's almost like a system of neo-feudalism. You got these overlords that own and run the city, and then you've got all the serfs that work within the city that are essentially slaves.
It's like technocratic diplomatic immunity. Right, you know, right now here in the district, a few years ago, some dude killed a woman, and he had diplomatic immunity. Couldn't touch him.
Yeah.
The UN.
Well, all of the UN people have diplomatic immunity. So we have UN people crawling all over our country, and they have diplomatic immunity.
They do. All UN diplomats have full immunity. Yeah, that's right. Wow.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, crazy. Sorry to talk on you, Vicky.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
The deeper you get into it, the more frightening it is. It's being allowed to be done, and it's all systemic. These are systems of cities, and I don't just mean computer systems, but I mean programmatic systems that have been set up basically to take our country apart.
Wait. They put them up right after World War II. Really, the UN agendas and all this, the National Security Act of 47. Look who drew that up. I mean, that's a Clifford and Chance Clifford family. That's the same people. London. These are, man, we're a British colony. I have to say it.
Yeah, I have to say that too. I agree with you on that.
And, you know, what's interesting too is you're kind of describing a system by which they're whittling away at national sovereignty from within, like a termite would. And it's all being destroyed one little innovation zone at a time, not from some external threat.
Without question. Yeah, they use things like trade so that people are forced into these type of collaborations, so that it's really the lifeblood of the economy. And even they control banking for this reason, and obviously education and media. So they have a departmentalized assault at us, and we really are starting to see it through it for what it has always been. Now we got to figure out what we got to do with this awareness.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of, I hate to say too late. I don't want to ever say give up, because saying it's too late is giving up. But we're really on the precipice. We're on the edge.
Absolutely. We've been asleep at the wheel for far, far too long. And of course, all this stuff has been planned for a very long time, just like this COVID agenda. It's been planned out, you know, 20 years in advance. This is no exception.
Yeah. You know, Americans always wait to the last minute, and maybe they'll do the same damn thing here. And hopefully everybody will rise to this and sort this out the way it needs to be.
Right. Well, where is John Wayne? We need John Wayne to ride to the rescue.
Well, now we've
he's on Rev Radio 6 to 8.
That's right. Yeah, the problem is the average Norma and Normie sheeples think that by voting and wearing a MAGA hat or a T-shirt, that's going to change things. And they're just going to vote again for change in 4 more years and then 4 more years. And until the decent people burn those stupid hats and stop idol worship with a controlled opposition in Donald Trump and wake up and wield the might of their majority population status in this country, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
That's how World War II could have happened. Could have been a Masonic ruse between Hitler and Britain run by the same organized crime. Well, the same thing could be said about Biden versus Trump and this whole narrative. And then people get into this very real theater, don't they? And they get very, very divisive within their own family, don't they?
Yeah. You know, I was so disappointed that Trump didn't start a new political party, because what needs to happen is that both the Democrats and the Republican Party both need to be destroyed.
Exactly. And they're the one party. It's one party.
Right. And Trump could have done that. He could have done that. And he didn't.
I don't think he's meant to. I think he's meant to crash his base into the rocks like he was an Israel scapegoat or Judas goat this whole time.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think you're probably right. When I saw that picture of Trump over in Saudi Arabia, you know, with his hands on that glowing orb.
Yeah.
you know, which was a systems control center, infrastructure control center. Actually, that was like probably the central hub of systems for Saudi Arabia. I lost hope there.
Well, and I think that there was something about Trump that I don't think he followed orders as well as they had hoped, because there certainly was an effort to remove him. But conversely, I think he was blackmailed and controlled through his debt and whatever other skeletons are in his closet. We're already at the top of the hour. And, you know, Vicky, next hour, I want to get into your research into this international socialism and just wherever else you want to take it. But this first hour just flew by.
Okay.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And I'm here with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals and Chris Weinart, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty. And our special guest for last hour and this hour is Vicky Davis. And I thought last hour we had a great conversation about so-called innovation zones, smart cities, and what they really represent, which is essentially destroying national sovereignty from within. And Vicky, you know, off air, we talked a little bit about some of the articles you've been writing about this international socialism and a new kind of system that they're trying to bring forth into the world. So maybe we could just start this hour off, you know, talking about your research into that particular area.
Okay, but before we do that, I found the article that Brad from Idaho was talking about. He wasn't talking about my article, but the issue in Idaho with Stephen Yates. So I would like to tell him that my website is thetechnocratictyranny.com, and the name of the article is Secrets of the Secret Society in Idaho. And the issue was about something called the Prosperity Project. And the Prosperity Project actually relates to what we were talking about earlier with charter cities and these international zones. And I have another article on my website called Pirates, Ports, and Treason. And if you read that article, you will find out about the prosperity zones, which is also an innovation zone. So I just wanted to say that because that actually ties in to what we were talking about before. And as it progresses through what we're going to talk about now.
Oh, great. Okay, well, you have two websites, don't you? So why don't you give us both of the websites that you have?
Yeah, my older website is called channelingreality.com. And in about 2015, I stopped updating that. I just left it frozen. And I started this new website called thetechnocratictyranny.com. And so that's my new one. That's where all my new articles are.
Okay, the Technocratic Tyranny. Uh-huh. And tell us about your work on this, the pirates and this. Why don't you expand on that a little bit before we jump into the other topic?
All right. Let me bring it up so that I can. I think I started that research with the shooting in Las Vegas. And whenever any kind of an event happens like that, I always look for a connection to the systems that I've researched. And turned out they're kind of, let me find it before I say that.
And by the way, that's a great title for an article. It captures your mind right away and you want to know more about it. So,
Okay. Yeah, it did start out with the shooting in Las Vegas. And as I was researching it, I found out that, The CEO and chairman of MGM Resorts International, his name is James J. Murren, and he was also a member of the National Infrastructure Advisory Committee, a committee of home scam security. And because of the location of that shooting near the airport, I figured that probably that hotel, that area, was probably in an international zone. And so that's why I was looking at it, to find out, you know, who owned that property and as much as I could find out about it. And, that's where I have, in that article is where I have the picture of Donald Trump with his hands on the glowing orb in right. Saudi Arabia. But what they're doing, of course, is engineering the, quote, free market, which is an oxymoron. You can't engineer a free market. It's either free or it's engineered, but it can't be both. And this whole global system is an engineered system centered at the zones. Okay. But now how that relates to the Prosperity Project is that there was a guy, his name was Shankar Singham. And a friend of mine in Oklahoma told me about the attempt to get Arizona and Oklahoma to sign into an interstate compact. And the objective of the compact was so that they could have connecting prosperity zones, as he called them. Well, the prosperity zone is an innovation zone. And so as I researched that, I do have a clip of him giving testimony to the Arizona legislature on the benefit of passing legislation that would authorize the establishment of these so-called prosperity zones. And the same thing was being done in Oklahoma. And so that's what this article is about. But as I researched Shankar Singham, he actually works out of Babson College, which I think is in Canada. I'm not sure. But he was a member of the Bretton Woods Committee. And he had his main business was in London, and he had been involved in the conversion of Russia to a market economy. So he's a major figure in terms of understanding this global system. And the model, if you want to look at the model, you could either look at Danzig, which was a free city, you know, do a search on the free city of Danzig. And there was an organization called the Hanseatic League, which promoted the idea of these separate zones for commerce. Okay, well, when you take a global look at separate zones, you see the City of London, the Vatican, Washington, D.C., and a couple of other places that I'm not thinking of at the moment. But the idea is that it's a separate territory. And so that's what Shankar Singham was promoting with this. Well, okay, now how this dovetails into the research that I just did on the Socialist International is that I found out that John C. Whitehead, who was the chairman of Goldman Sachs for a long time, let me find that in the article. Nope, that's not it. Hang on, I've got too many windows open, but this is important because it was a surprise connection. Whenever I do research, I find surprising connections. And actually, I sent that to you, didn't I, Dave?
Yes. Now, okay. Ahead of Goldman Sachs recently, or was this in the past?
It was in the past, but when he retired, he started the Goldman Sachs Foundation and the New America Foundation. And the New America Foundation is really important in terms of policy. That is the organization that started out. It was started by journalists, but there were tech CEOs. Eric Schmidt actually was on the original committee or the original board of the New America Foundation. And so the redesign of our country and the systems and everything else, the New America Foundation is very important in that. And it was funded by John C. Whitehead. Okay. Now, the connection with Whitehead is that Goldman Sachs, when they started their foundation, they promised to fund 10,000 small businesses. Now, I think those 10,000 small businesses were tech companies. And as you understand about the smart cities, they use small businesses because they really don't want to attract a whole lot of attention. And, you know, and if you had IBM move to town, that would attract attention, or Microsoft or somebody like that. So what they do, they start these small businesses, and they are the tech leaders for the conversion of local systems into the control grid. Okay, but what I found is that looking at this marketing brochure that, or this page, you know, to apply for the small business assistance, they mentioned Babson College. Well, I knew Babson College was where Shankar Singham was located. So, and he was marketing Prosperity Zones. So, I don't know whether I clicked on the link for that, but anyway, I got to SIPE, which is the Center for it's one of the NED institutes for business. And SIPE has on their website a brochure of Shankar Singham. So you've got like a full circle there. You know, it's it all connects. And Shankar Singham is the managing director of the Competitiveness Enterprise Development at Babson College. So what Shankar Singham is really marketing is those international zones. And and what he was doing was trying to get state legislatures to enter into an interstate compact for the two connecting sides of the zone, one in Arizona, one in Oklahoma.
Wow. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in? What do you want to add to this conversation, man?
Well, I think it all boils down to, like Vicky is saying, and Chris and you have said, there's a consolidation of unimaginable wealth and unimaginable power in the hands of a very few Satanists, and the rest of the world is just going along with it like la 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 la. It's just insane.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, it is a very complex system if you take it in its entirety. But if you take it a piece at a time and build it as if you're building a million-piece puzzle, it's not that complicated at all. It all makes logical sense. They're built, and it's systemic, and they use the same pattern over and over again, because that's what systems people do. They have a working model. They take that that concept and take it from one company to another company to another company, because they don't want to reinvent the wheel, right? There's no need to reinvent the wheel. And they're building global systems so you can, once you know the elements of a system as it's being installed in a county or a county, a city or a county jurisdiction, then you can take that model and look for it in other places. And actually, I have an article on my website about Pakistan and economic development in Pakistan. And it is the same cookie cutter model that they're installing over in Pakistan.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And it really does seem like this is all sort of, you know, top down operation from the United Nations. That's why it's always the same solution. It's always the same model, the same system that they're trying to bring forward all over the world.
Yeah. Except that I wouldn't lay it off on the United Nations. They don't have people that are smart enough, frankly. It's the tech companies and USAID and NED and, you know, very smart people in our country. And there is no philanthropy in it. It's a very lucrative thing. Because what they do, they get countries in debt. It's the what they call, they blame this on China. Excuse me, I think I'm going to sneeze. They blame this debt trap on China, but that debt trap originated in the United States. It's the global international financial debt trap. So they get a locality in debt, and then they trade. Debt for nature. That's one of the IMF programs that was defined in a G7 meeting, a G7 summit, 1990, and they trade debt for nature. Mm-hmm. So they take the debt off the locality's hands in exchange for territory. And I think, you know, it may be that territory then can become like a Chinese city in the middle of America, or, you know, like outside of Salt Lake City, or like what they tried to put in outside of Boise, Idaho.
Or the California fires.
Well, the California fires, yeah, that, who knows, I don't know the reason behind that, but I think it might be kind of a punishment kind of thing.
Well, thank you for clarifying, you know, about the UN. I don't think the UN cooks up any of this stuff on their own. They're just sort of the facade that, or the government fixture that they use to enact these agendas that are coming from a higher source. I agree. I don't think there's anybody in the United Nations that has enough intelligence to put together much of anything. They're just the administrators and the front men for it. Absolutely. Chris, go ahead, man. What do you want to add to this?
Yeah, I agree, man. There are definitely a lot of bureaucrats that are in the UN. They're there to more or less present us with a theater for the public to get engrossed with. But really, I think that, like you say, the true calculators are in these NGO groups and these think tanks and these, you know, Pentagon advisors and or national security councils or things like that. There's a whole level of infrastructure and decision making that is beyond the scope of American democracy. And this is something that we're very easily recognizing with the election coup that happened in our country and everything that's followed.
Right. And if you notice what NED's objectives are, free elections. Okay, they're very interested in free elections and free press and all of this stuff. But what they say and what they do are two different things. What they want is to control the election system. And if they control the election system, of course, then they can control who wins.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, the money system, they pretty much run every game in town.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Whoever designed these systems, who came up with these strategies, they are brilliant people beyond probably most people's imaginations, you know, how brilliant this whole global strategy is.
It's beyond the capability of humans to come up with a cross-century plan like we're witnessing. There's something, some intelligence, some entity beyond space and time that is guiding these minions. There's no human that is smart enough to do this over millennia, really, but at least centuries.
Yeah, well, I don't know. People who think systematically, you know, some people call it a machine mind or whatever, but people who can take a small idea and a small idea for a big thing, or an idea for a big thing, and break it down to the smallest step of how we get there. They are people whose minds think in systems, and every system has multiple subsystems. And so when you get a team of people and you're working on something like that, they kind of feed into each other. And so I do think these are man-conceived ideas, but they are just beyond the scope of what most people would ever even think about, because they're not in position to think about it.
I respectfully disagree. There is no way that people in the 16th or 17th century could envision the flow of today. I mean, it's just, and it's all fallen into step.
That I agree with you. But the ability to think in systems has always existed. And you can tell that by looking at the cathedrals. I mean, you know, whoever the architects were that built the cathedrals, they had minds capable of visualizing the entire structure. What would it take to build that, and what do you need to do? So the ability of the human mind to think in this way has always existed. But the target, whatever the target was of people who think along those lines, you're right, they were not thinking about that back in the 16th century or the 17th century. But people like them built on their ideas over time. So
sure, I understand where you're going with that.
Yeah. Can I pose a theory here?
Sure.
Chris.
Perhaps imagine that, say, most conventional religions as we know them, the Abrahamic covenants, as they would be referred to as, they only really narrate a 5,000-6,000 year, maybe 8,000, 10,000 year history of the American human civilization. I'm thinking, and if you look at the Atlanteans or some of these higher civilizations or things like the Kali Yuga cycle or some of these things, you know, there's all these different evidences of these pre-existing civilizations of higher intelligence that could have this information or even understand human design or even, you know, human intelligent design that could have happened 10,000, 12,000 years ago. Something of this nature is a possibility too. There's so many things that are being discounted by our conventional religious mind frame. And I have to say that really what's going on here is really a group of people that it has always aggrandized them. They've always used these structures for their own enrichment. And this has been the generational wealth and the bloodline that has pretty much since civilization used these mechanisms to control humanity, whether it's through feudalism, whether it's through admiralty law, whether it's through Vatican, or whether it's through nation state or corporations or money or any of this stuff. So look at this like as a Masonic organization that really doesn't necessarily care about which God you believe in, as long as you believe in the order and the syndicate first. And that's like really how we've got to look at these people, because they are all operatives to this secret society, this Kabbalistic old wisdom that has been hoarded from humanity, and they're using it against us. And I don't know if it's, you know, who's directing them or whatever, but man, we seem to be repeating the same mistakes over and over again.
throughout history, and these guys seem to be the culprits pulling it over on us. So I think we're like slaves to Kronos in some regards. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there and seeing what you guys think.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you that, and who knows what happened to the previous civilizations. Maybe they reached the same point that we are now, you know, where they were doing genetic engineering and they destroyed themselves, you know, except for a few remnants of people that didn't get destroyed. So, you know, who knows how many 5,000 years really in the history of the earth is nothing. So I totally agree with what you said, even though I have no evidence to support that. It's just what I believe.
Well, most of the evidence, these guys are like scurrying to cover it up and to erase from the ranks of human awareness. And it's a horde within their own ranks to use against us. This is what I'm saying. These guys know about a whole deeper truth, and they're just giving us these fairy tales and letting us clash about them.
That's true.
We see, too, how these people know human nature better than most average person does. They understand how humans are going to behave on a macro level as well as a micro level. And Giuseppe, is the call-in number still working? Maybe we could try to take a few calls, see if we can get someone to call in.
703-879-8880, but I've never gotten it to where I actually see these calls. But if somebody wants to try, I'm looking at the call right now. So if I see it, I'll bring them in.
Okay, 703-879-8880. Give it a try, see if you can come on. Or contact me on Skype, Dolphin_Dave, and we can add you through Skype as well. So let's see if we can get something going. Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask Vicky a question while I got her on here? I know we talked about Hong Kong and stuff like that. Have you looked into, like, say, some of the unfair treaties that came at the end of the first Opium War in the British Empire and the Russell Trust and the Skull and Bones institutions that maybe been handled from there that run some of these opium trades and prostitution trades out of China and controlled most of the Chinese people for the last 200 years? Or longer, and of course, have represented itself into many institutions in America, things like Johns Hopkins or many other offerings, even possibly funding the Nazis through Prescott Bush or, you know, Dulles through Harriman and was it Sullivan and Cromwell or anyways. Long story short, I think these guys have always left their face and their marks on history, whether it's the pirate flag or the Skull and Bones or the Nazi SS. All these things seem to be like things that recur over and over again. Some say it's the head of John the Baptist that it represents. I don't know, the Skull and Crossbones, but there's something going on with that. This cabal seems to really, like I say, exceed the convention of empires and to really infiltrate the infrastructures of all these things through the trade guilds and through the merchant guilds. So I was going to ask you if you're familiar with the 12 Libraries of London and some of the functions and features that has held in terms of the charters into the United States or even into like the East India companies or some of these things, because it seems to be this is the way that they make these empires is through controlling trade initially, and then from there, you know, everything else comes into place with these laws.
I have looked at the organizational structure of the City of London, and I have to say that is the most powerful organizational structure for controlling business that I have ever seen.
Yes.
And actually it goes to people too, because the Queen is the defender of the church, and the church is the business of human, what would you say? He ministers to the soul, if you will. But the church is a control for people. The City of London is an organization of associations that represent a particular trade. So that they don't engage in the trade, but they control the trade through the standards of practice and through the pension funds of the people who work in the trade. So in terms of a control mechanism, I just can't think of anything more powerful than that.
Well, and also where all the banks are located as well.
Yeah, the foreign exchange markets, the insurance markets, you're right.
Right. And there are worshipful companies. That's what they call them, the worshipful companies of, they don't call them bankers, but worshipful companies of fishmongers, we'll say. And it's those, they're all centered in London, and they control the trade. And they each one of those companies has a military unit associated with it, and they were created by royal charter, royal patent.
Right. And you know, worshipful is a Masonic term. That's
oh yeah. Dave, yeah. That's it. This is Masonry, no doubt. This is like the superseding beneath the scope of empires or ecclesiastical power. This is the real power. The like what George Kennan talks about, straight power concepts. This is absolutely what we're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I ran into the city of London. Well, I researched them when I was doing research on refugee resettlement, because the Anglican Church is very involved in that, and they are there's an Anglican. I forget what their name, but anyway, they're a UN NGO. I also encountered them when I was doing research on our electric grid, on the smart grid. I wrote an article called The Rest of the Story, you know, because there were other people writing about the smart grid. So I wrote about everything other than the grid itself. And what I found out is that a woman named Fiona Wolf was an energy consultant, and she came over here in the 1990s to help us, quote, deregulate our electric utility system. And where she worked was for PJM, which is in Maryland. And after she did her dirty work here, she went back and became the Lord Mayor of London, the first female Lord Mayor of London. And right now, today, we have a lot of foreign ownership of our of pieces of our electric grid. And one of the big owners is a British company called National Grid PLC. And I can't remember what the PLC is. But a lot of this system has been built by foreign companies. They're big companies in their country, but they form small business or consulting companies here, which is really just a front for the big company back in their home country.
Interesting.
So, the whole global system of free market economics really severed control of our economy from our political system.
Yeah, my last video, I was talking about Germanies are actually guilds. That's what Germany means in Spain. These were what they called the guilds before they set up the new guilds under Ferdinand and Isabella. So yeah, interesting stuff. You know, like see how they control trade like this out of Florence as well, and out of the Netherlands and stuff. Yeah, this is amazing stuff. The Dutch Empire and then into the East India companies. This is truly amazing stuff.
And if you're studying the United States, you'll find out that just about every profession has an association that.
Okay. Kirk. I got a caller on, but it didn't seem to go through. Giuseppe, I know that Hijacker wants to come on too. Maybe bring
Let
him
me
on.
Add him on, and then I'll try Captain Kirk again.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I really maybe it's enjoyed the hijacker. That research on City of London, that was fascinating.
Yeah, it's heavy, man. They've run this gambit for a long time through many empires, and this is just one of many. The Venetian guilds ran the same thing through sovereign debt bonds for like 800 years before this. In the same.
Yeah, and of course the you know, really the central bank that has been the model for all modern central banks was the London Central Bank, and that was formed in 1694, and it's really served as the model for or template for all modern central banks going forward.
The legendary hijacker has joined the call.
Okay. Yeah, great show. Happy Halloween.
You're cutting out then. We're not hearing it real good. Let's try again.
Okay. I said it was a great show coming through.
Can you guys hear him?
He's kind of electrically affected, like he's going through a vocoder or something.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not going to work.
No, there you go. No,
you're good. There you go. There you go. That's better. That's good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe it cleaned up. Listen, I just want to let you guys know you are the number one on Revolution Radio weekly show. You just broke the record. Absolutely incredible. Vic, I think, is great. Very good analytical mind researcher. But you all were hitting on real close to at the heart of the matter. And it does appear, if you go back what Vicky said before, their architecture. And we actually take a look at these old cathedral monument. There's buildings all over the place. It's a Roman type of dome pillar, large blocks. So it does appear, back to what I think it was Dolphin, I'm not sure, had said, or Dave, about the Atlanteans. We're dealing with a super intelligent type of being. And so from my perspective, when you go back and look through the eyes or the of a Christian perspective, then you get back to the Nephilim, back to the tall whites. There's portraits of them. There's early photographs of them. When the camera first came out, you can catch it. Early video of them. They seem to have been a worldwide organization. I'm talking about the Tartarians all the way to about 1742. And then for whatever reason, but they left, I think, in their wake. I think they left the bloodlines. I think they breeded down. They learned how to take over all the royal houses. Right around, you see, about the 16th century, that's when you see all of these Rosicrucian, the Freemason organizations come in, Thule Society. You get all these secret societies they seem to have set up. And so I just wanted to say, you don't need to look any further than I think it's this, these large people, this Tartarian race, for whatever reason, they seem to have pulled out of the earth or pulled away from normal civilization, whether they went to the hollow earth or Antarctica, I don't know. But I actually think they're the ones quarterbacking that. And that would account for their rapacious systems that they set up. And one other thing, before I hang up, the other big thing is that we are handicapped as a species. So if you've got this super intelligent and they, you know, supposedly fallen angel genetic bloodline, and they're really intelligent, then you got to say, as soon as they see us, they realize, wait a minute. You all don't lie? Really? You don't think about, like, murder? Really? You mean you don't steal? What kind of strange creature are you? And then all of a sudden we're at a complete disadvantage. We have so many governors on our heart that says, you know, you don't lie to people, you don't rip people off, you don't, you know, take your neighbor's wife, you don't kill. And so we're at a really bad disadvantage. And then finally, I do know the way to fix the system, and it is 435 congressional conservative councils, where all the activists in the congressional district come together and do sort of like what you're doing today on today's show as a think tank. Unfortunately, we're just too selfish, and the people that got the money are already sold out. So I don't think we're going to pull it out, folks. I think it's going to go the way of the Book of Revelations, but I'll stay for a couple seconds if you want to hit me with anything. If not, I just wanted to put, you know, my couple of pennies in there. And Vicky, you do a really great service. Absolutely. I can't do what you do. I'm dyslexic. I cannot research like you can. And for you to be able to break this down and put all these pieces together, it's just really great. And I will go to your site. The technocratic, is it? Yep.
Technocratic tyranny.
The technocratictyranny.com. Yeah. So I just want to throw one in there. I think it's the Nephilim and the Tall Whites, and I still think they're around. But anyways, I think that's the added piece of the puzzle. And, of course, that gets back to the biblical serpent seed line. But thanks for taking my call, you guys. I really do appreciate it.
Well, Hijacker, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Dave, go ahead.
To respond to a couple of things you said, because I thought you brought up some great points, man. And if you can, stick around for a few minutes, man.
I'll ride shotgun. I pretty much said, go ahead.
Okay. I think that, as you brought up, the bloodlines, I think, are a very important thing. I've done a couple of shows on it. And I think that's one of the hidden keys to so many elements of this control over humanity. And I agree. I don't think that these high up bloodlines are 100% human in the same way that we know it. Maybe we could get
Vicky's on, Dave. Response. Dave, Captain Kirk has joined the call.
Oh, great. Okay, let's get Captain Kirk on. Go ahead, Kirk.
Hi, everybody. I'd like to say that regarding the bloodlines and Zionism, I think what nobody realizes is that the bloodline of the Greys is involved with the Moon Cult, and the bloodline of the Greens or Orion Group is involved with the Sun Cult. And part of Zionism is you have to get a member, a human that carries the gray blood, to mate with a human that carries the green blood to come up with the great designated offspring, such as Alexander the Great. And somehow Homo capensis figures into all this, which is another subspecies per Karen Hughes, the banking whistleblower, that Homo capensis is maybe the tears amongst us wheat, as mentioned in the Bible.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know anything about any of that stuff because I only research systems, but it's interesting. I was in Greece and I did see on the it was on the Peloponnese Island somewhere, where they did have these a gigantic ring, you know, where apparently they did their Olympic Games, and they did in the travel thing that I was reading, they did talk about giants, people that were giant.
You know, yeah, we're joined by another Revolution Radio legend, the Mechanic. Mechanic, welcome.
I don't know if I'm legendary yet, but I'm working on it.
You are.
Yeah, right. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I know I'm just another caller here, but listen. Today's date, or yesterday's date, right? What was it? April 9th, 2021. The 99th day of the year, right? What is, you got April 9th, April 4 plus 2 plus 2 plus 1, 9, another 9. 99th day of the year, we have a shutout, a no-no in San Diego as a ritual by the elite for a 99-year-old death of a prince.
Huh.
Yeah.
All
of this yesterday. Gematria tells the story, folks. It's the code of how they operate. It really is. And more ritual. How's everybody doing?
Good. Been a great
show.
It is
really interesting to look at numbers, and I haven't studied any of it, but I have noticed coincidences of dates and things. 9/11 is the big one in your face, you know, because it was the kickoff for the a lot of things, the technocratic tyranny in our country, but also the global emergency management system.
So, well, 11 is a very powerful number. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say is that mechanic. On gematria, all I can simply say, I think that's two sides of a coin. I think people are manipulating and they do calculate dates like 9/11, like what Vicky said, certain other dates, of course, they set up. But what I've noticed is that it's beyond coincidence. You can go back and you can actually look at certain events, and there's like no way, not even a quantum computer can make certain symbols and signs and numbers show up. And so I think it's actually a language of God in which the Illuminati somehow they've been able to crack. And then talking about the caller before that, Captain Kirk, about intermixing the bloodlines. There's this one guy, his name is, he's a professor, John. He's out of a Pittsburgh or Temple University professor, and Locke or something like that. And he's done over 10,000 hypnotic interviews of people who've been abducted. And his famous statement is, every time I sit down and I get ready to go into a session for this person to talk about their abduction experience, the first thing I always say to myself is, okay, I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to sit here and it's not going to happen again. And the person starts to talk and it's always about the sperm and the egg. And it's always breaks down to some kind of genetic manipulation as far as reproductive. And he goes, I do it again. I fall asleep. He goes, I fall asleep because I've heard the same old thing 10,000 times. So there's something about the grays and the abduction and that has to do with the sperm and the egg. That's my little take there on that whole alien mixing of the bloodline. Go ahead.
Interesting. Captain Kirk, do you want to add something to what Jacker just said?
Well, actually, I'd like to talk to Jacker sometime about this because we'll get way too technical for, like your guest said, she's not aware of any of this or whatever. But I'd like to talk to him about it because it's obvious that we got – I mean, it's things are coming to a boil. We're running out
of
time.
We can run it tomorrow night, 11 o'clock. Hook it up, Jacker. Jack will be on the show. You can come on in. We'll run it tomorrow night, 11 o'clock. Let's do it.
11 Eastern?
Jack is on.
Which studio?
This is Captain Kirk, right? This is Captain Kirk?
Yep.
Yeah, you've heard him. You've heard the roundtable. We'll do the Sunday night roundtable. Jacker, you want to run it with Captain Kirk? Let's do it.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'd like to talk just in a personal phone call about what my, because you make models, Hijacker, about things, and I've made a model that is so on spot on right now. I'm kind of scared because I heard Billy Bean break down the two-star generals in our military, how a third of them basically were against Trump, and if you break down the numbers by category of Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marines, it sure looks like the Army and the Air Force, and Air Force used to be the Army Air Corps, it sure looks like Army is against the Navy, if you break that down. And so that's something no one's talking about, but I think the Army and the Navy aren't getting along, and that's why the Navy has released those patents that pretty much make us fighting the wars in the Middle East for the last 20 or 30 years look pretty stupid when the Navy's released patents for making seawater into diesel and seawater into gasoline.
Yeah. And, the big picture that Vicky has brought in these last 2 hours, the big picture is that these guys are, they got the money, they got the organizations. It doesn't matter if it's the Jews or connected with the Mormon clique, who's connected with the Jesuits. These guys are rolling us up. They got the money. And I don't see, I think we're almost in triage now, is that it's every man for his own soul, and to try to save your own soul as we go into this just looks like hell on earth time. So I do appreciate you so much, Vicky, what you do, because what Vicky does, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. It's not some guy that's like me collecting little nuts researching. This is, she does hardcore stuff. So I do appreciate what you've done, Vicky.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I would like to comment on that war between the Army and the Navy. And the reason why that is if you look at the, or at least the way that the technocrats were looking at it, once they have a world governing system, there will be no more war. If there is no more war, then you don't need a standing army, right? And so the idea was to convert the army to be system administrators for the technocratic systems, and also to be first responders for the global emergency management system. And the Navy, of course, they are rulers of the seas. And so they figured we still need a Navy, but they would be a global Navy.
Yeah, the Admiralty Law, right? The Admiralty Law?
Yeah. Well, but it's law right they've, now, so they've rolled all of that into maritime law now, but it's basically the same.
Well, what people need to start doing is representing, let me get focused on here, representing themselves as a man or a woman in court. And under Black's Law and common law, I believe that we'll have much more success rather than depending on this maritime law where it's basically tyrannical rule. I mean, it's literally a court-ruled Jolly Roger system. The fringe on the flag, the hypocrisy of the oath they take, even the corruption of the bailiff down to the clerk. I have no faith in any of it.
How do you guys think this connects with the this newly created Space Force in this war between the Army?
Space Force? Yeah.
Well, the satellites for communications will be very important. And so, control of space is really important. That's the objective, is to be able to control space so that they can protect the satellites, which are essential to the communications systems.
And they'll run the robot armies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, Hijacker, John Mack was the guy who did all those hypnosis sessions.
Yeah, that's it. That's the guy. Yeah, John Mack. That's right. Mm-hmm. 10,000...
I'd like to ask Captain Kirk in the chat earlier. He mentioned about Saturn, the black sun, and all that, and we don't have much time, but if you got a minute of a brief explanation about what you see and all that.
I wasn't actually talking about Saturn being the black sun, but I've heard that. With Zionism, with Zionism, you have Isis, a moon cult, Ra, a sun cult, engaged in a dialectic script written by the El cult or Saturn. Saturn, the El cult, are the money changers. They're the bankers. They write the script for the other two, sun and moon cult, to act out a dialectic which ratchets the human race however they want it, the big dialectic being a war. But really what the cult of Saturn, their real function is they handle tribute on the planet, because Zionism is a succession of one country taking over another country and then that country paying tribute. And so the bankers or the priests determine what the tribute will be. And the way they determine everything is they always create scarcity. The Irish potato famine was created to make Irish people have to flee Ireland and come to America so that they could get involved in the Mexican-American War. And I mean, there's that type of manipulation going on by the bankers who are actually priests running the other cults. That's my opinion from studying it.
Yeah. Interesting, Captain Kirk. We're down to the final minute or so of the show. And Vicky, I just want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank all the callers that called in too. But Vicky, I just want to give you a moment for some final thoughts. And again, thank you for your time.
Oh, boy. Final thoughts. All of this, everything that's going on is assist. It's development of a system. It's a control grid. And you can start with one little piece of it, and because it's a system, you can figure it out. It's just like a big puzzle. And that's the beauty of systems, is that you can build them, but you can also deconstruct them intellectually or physically. You know, once you understand what it is that you're looking at, then the trails become really easy to follow. Because you know what you're looking for, because it is a system.
Okay, great. And thanks for all the hard research you do, Vicky. And I like that you don't speculate. You stick to the proof in your writings, and you do such good work. Thank you. That's